Tacky Talk time with State Representative Tacky Chan of Quincy. This will be actually the last Tacky Talk of April 2023, Tacky.
Yeah, it's essentially our third year anniversary at this point in April. So happy anniversary.
I didn't get you a cake, sorry.
I didn't get you chocolates.
maybe I'll send you some flowers.
So, we're aging together, Joe. That's all I got to say. We're aging together.
Exactly. And we're documenting it for all to see.
Yeah, digital recordings. It's a lifetime with this stuff.
That's right. When we're long gone, people look back and say, oh, look at those two old guys.
Essentially, yes. This is a strange journey we've been keeping together.
But you know what? We're here and now, so this is the time we're in. So this is what we're doing.
We are. And today is the day after the budget. So it's kind of the budget hangover for the House to see how it went.
It seemed to go pretty smoothly this year, though.
It went extremely smoothly this year. There's sufficient funds to get us through the cycle. Big surprise, folks, if people are able to get some of their projects at home and some major policy initiatives done by funding, it tends to cause less problems. Not a big surprise, right? And the tax package that we talked about at length twice now, that we did a few weeks back, also eliminated need to discuss tax revenue debate as part of the budget, whether it be increasing or seeking tax cuts or deductions or credits. And since we already addressed all that, that actually took out a big chunk of the first day's debate. First day debate is often about revenue issues and trying to deal with any type of credits, deductions. So that really sped things up, actually, taking that portion out.
And yeah, you don't have to argue about what to spend money on because you have enough for everything.
That's essentially correct. I mean, we wouldn't push forward a $1.1 billion tax reduction initiative over the course of 3 years if there wasn't sufficient funds projected out. And we can't predict the future. And historically, the House and the Senate actually is fairly conservative about the revenue generation. We're very, very concerned, which is why people are always very surprised there's a little bit of surplus at the end of every year. Not a monster surplus. I mean, you got to remember it's a percentage of the size of the budget. But I mean, we always create some buffers in space in case revenues don't quite work out. And, you know, we get our big numbers, obviously April. We get our numbers at the fiscal year end on, you know, mid-July. We get our next big set of numbers in October when the comptroller closes the books. And by October, it sets up the projection for the remainder of the fiscal year. As we've talked in the past, you know, Christmas season, you know, January numbers are very important regarding especially sales tax. And you also finish off tax collection in October for the late filers. And you get the estimated halfway through estimated tax filings. And then you know, when we get to March, you know, you get to the, the section, you know, of car sales and things like that in February, and it sets us up for April. And most people do not like to let the government hold their money on the refunds longer than they have to. So the refund numbers come up pretty quick in March. And it, again, helps set up the projections, you know, for the following fiscal year by the time we get it. The Senate is always a little bit advantageous because the Senate will get one more month of revenue projection numbers than we will of April. It's one of these kind of funky things where in a month's time, the numbers could show better or worse, and the Senate will respond accordingly. And then when it gets to the conference committee, they'll look at the June and May-June numbers as we try to get the budget to the governor's desk by June 30th. So this has always been a bit of a moving target. I don't think people really appreciate the fact that you're not exactly working with actual cash in hand yet. And we have to create projections based on the past and looking forward to what economists think down the future. So, you know, obviously, the last 3 years were very unusual. I will never expect to see this again in my lifetime on a number of different levels. But for economic purposes, it's been very, very unusual. And, at some point, the other shoe's got to fall in the economy. And we can't predict when. All I know is that this budget and definitely the next budget as well is kind of a brace for impact situation. Do I think it's going to be like 03, 08? No. Do I think that you should not be expecting, you know, high levels of generosity from the Commonwealth? Probably yes. I'm not thinking that we're going to have to cut to the bone. But I mean, I think there's going to be a paling back. And the rainy day fund, a stabilization fund, sitting at about $9 billion against a $55 billion budget, you know, is a pretty good buffer zone in case, you know, there's a downturn.
Does the House budget differ all that much from the governor's proposal, Tacky?
Yeah. I mean, we get new information after the governor's folks get their budget. So, for example, you know, we had the district attorney in Norfolk County looking for some funds, but because his rent agreements came up after the governor's budget was done, you can't, you know, try to cram a rent agreement down on your office space around the governor's deadlines and budget filing. So once he got his final numbers up, you know, we House Reserve revised the Norfolk County DA's numbers to reflect the higher infrastructure cost. And he's baked in for 5 or so years, I think. You can ask Mike about that. But I mean, you know, about, you know, 5 years baked in budget. So he got himself a fixed rent with, I believe, no increase. So he did a great job with rent. But again, the House has to account for that. And like all state agencies, as they kind of readjust their budget numbers based on, I don't know, utilities, rent, things like
fixed
that.
Fixed costs, essentially, right? Yeah.
Fixed costs. I mean, the House will adjust the budget away from the governor as we get newer numbers. And this includes health insurance, GIC, this Group Insurance Commission. And, you know, those numbers are being changed. I've been trying to deal with my own open enrollment now because this is the first substantive change in open enrollment for years, especially the Tufts-Harvard Pilgrim merger. I'm a Harvard Pilgrim utilizer. And we all know about the data breach. And it's total chaos over there regarding processing claims and billing. I've already contacted the Office of Economic Affairs, which oversees the Division of Insurance. I'm like, hey, guys, you probably should pay attention to this. This is going to get ugly. People aren't able to get paid for their jobs on reimbursements by insurance companies. So hopefully this is resolved soon. So, I mean, obviously, you know, everyone else is feeling it, too, you know, regarding the cost of health insurance. That does trickle down to me, like everybody else. And, you know, my share of health insurance is going to go up, you know, as part of my salary, too. So, you know, again, the House will deviate from the governor. I expect the Senate to deviate from the House and the governor. Again, when they get more numbers, there's other government agencies reporting in about infrastructure cost changes.
Of course, the biggest change this year, I guess, for the budget is the new revenue from the millionaire's tax, right?
Yeah, I've been really conservative. I expected the governor already did. And there's no expecting. She put a $1 billion cap on it. We did the same, and the Senate should also follow suit. We're putting anything above $1 billion in a separate trust fund. We really don't know how much is going to project out. The advertising you saw is old data, very much pre-pandemic data from 2017, if I recall correctly, and it's now 2023. After 3 months of very strange, 3 years, actually the last 2 months too, very crazy upheaval of everyone's income, especially those in passive income and the home sales. So it's been a real fluctuating market, and I expect the fluctuations will continue for a while. So we put $1 billion aside, with $500 million into transportation items and $500 million in education. The Constitution can't dictate exactly how we spend the money, as long as it somehow falls into those two buckets. So, you know, we're able to address things like, you know, permanent school lunches, for example.
And the MBTA.
Yeah, there's going to be more shuttle buses. I think there's plenty of notifications, flyers, social media, emails. As they continue to do tire replacement in the Red Line, as they get closer to certain stations, you know, during the weekend, it's actually just easier for them as they get closer and closer to a station area, just to shut the station down and rip up all the ties and just replace everything at once in 48 hours as quickly as they can. This is, again, it's not as easy as sounds. You have to go in there, you know, inspect it, rip everything out, and the equipment is on, you know, human driven. I mean, it's people doing the work physically. Lifting, putting, placing, lining up, and using, you know, various machines to carry, and also do the testing of the material, plus, you know, ensure it is properly aligned. And some of the spots of the train rail doesn't have a lot of space next to it. Those who ride train know that some parts are elevated, and that you do not have the ability to spread out, so to speak. So as you get closer to a train station, there's even less space to spread out.
Is there money in the new budget? I'm assuming there is for the T.
Yeah, we under the millionaire's tax part of the half man, we put some money aside for the MBTA. The supplemental budget that the governor filed also includes some money for the bonuses, as we've talked about the hiring challenges. And I think they had a hiring session back at the Walston Station last Saturday, I believe.
Yep.
So I suspect there'd be more of those coming up. And again, I mean, this is a pro-labor market right now. You know, there's plenty of jobs out there at various skill and income levels. It's very competitive for everyone trying to make this work. And the T is no exception. You know, it's, again, changing workforce. The idea of a pension and a government job. Younger folks don't aren't interested. It's not. It's just a different. It's just a different mentality.
It is, yeah, and it's going to take, you know, generations for it to change over to the new reality, if you will.
Agreed. When I was younger in government, you know, the idea of a pension wasn't a priority for me. But you know, talk to a generation older than I am, when young people got out, I mean, their priority was to secure a job that wasn't mm-hmm. going anywhere. Even though it wasn't exactly a huge money-making job in terms of every year increases or a massive spike in salary change because of growing economy. You know, the idea of a pension and a guaranteed steady gig is a big deal. Today, it's not. You know, survey of millennials, you know, identifies quality of life at the workplace as a priority. Now, yep. I'm going to tell you, going out in the middle of the night, carrying large steel and concrete railings to work rapidly and using hammers and large machinery. And if you're looking for high quality of life, like you're living at home, doing your job, social media for money, there's a huge disparity.
Exactly. It takes a special person to do that kind of work for sure. And there's few and far between, and you need to pay for them.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, everyone's paying premium dollars, much as they can for any kind of workers, but again, it's a different quality of life issue. I mean, pandemic has changed, especially among millennials. You know, they see quality of life as being a priority, meaning they'd like to dictate the terms of the workplace. Mm. And that isn't how life works, folks. And, you know,
anything in the budget specific to Quincy you can talk about, Jackie?
Sure. I mean, we got some money again for the budget. I mean, we got some overtime patrols again from state police along DCR properties, including Quinshaw Drive and French Road Parkway. Bruce Ayers worked very hard advocating for that money. And he also, Bruce did a great job. He got some money for the Rashudi Drive. I know that's a big problem for all our constituents regarding a temporary traffic light system, meaning that the traffic lights are mobile and it's not like a permanent structure. And working with Allie over at the City Traffic Department, which everybody has high praise for, as well as in the state, and they're hoping they can come up with some solutions regarding better traffic pattern through a lighting system over there, Rashudi Drive. It's going to take some months to sort out, but you know, if the money holds through the budget, you know, that'd be very helpful. You know, now with the matching Bob Hale and donating to the Presidential Library, another $500,000 from the state is going to go into that project for a total of $1 million over the course of 2 years. Again, it's a huge priority for the mayor, and the delegation's very happy we could support that. We got a few dollars for QCAP to do some more homeless assistance. Again, you know, economy shifting, and we'll see how the second half of this year works. You know, I got some of my own projects done, obviously, as well. Germantown Neighborhood Center, Queens Asian Resources are both important agents to me and service agencies for the city. In the case of actually Quincy Resources, it is for the Commonwealth. They've actually been branching out to a lot of places and done interviews with Philip and those guys. You know, we got a few dollars for the hazmat, again, for the Quincy fire. As we all know, the Fall River fire, a big part of it is the hazmat component that is, you know, essential equipment and training for that stuff. And, you know, it's well-invested money. You know, I'm going to cheat now and switch over to my phone here to look at stuff. Other things we were able to get done, you know, $200,000 for Quincy College to help support those students. We got some money for Friends of Faxon Park, an important project for the speaker. in particular. We got a little bit of money for an organization of Chinese Americans. They've been working very hard regarding the Asian hate issues and the impact on children, especially teenagers, and the challenges of bullying and things like that. So, we did well overall. Oh, Beaches Commission, right? I'm still on the Beaches Commission, Metropolitan Beaches Commission. About $900,000 spent throughout the area of all the metropolitan beaches owned by the DCR. And, there's some money there also for the Forward Basin regarding DEP issues. It's not exactly a Quincy issue in the sense that it's really both sides. River that was carried forward by the delegation on the Weymouth Braintree side to carry that water on that project. So I think you guys get the picture that we don't all jump on one thing together. All of us work on a different project around the city, as well as the geographic region has mutual interest. So not one person carries all the weight, so to speak.
Sure. And speaking of water issues, any dredging money for Quincy Bay?
Working on it. There's about a million two-ish, I think, in cash that hopefully the city's keeping its waterway trust fund that we got over the past legislative cycle. It better be in that waterways trust fund. Otherwise, we're going to have some problems. It's about a $7 million project, give or take. Wow. It's like six or seven. It's the price tag shifts around. Dredging ain't cheap. Hmm. So I still got some bond money out there. I'm still waiting to get my appointment with the governor. It's time to make the ask and see if she'll release the bond money, even if it's in part over the multiple years. Same thing with the C Street safety project. I got bond money. And with a Democratic governor, it's a good time to advocate for that. What the timing is good. I think I'm in good stead with the administration, but again, I'm still waiting for my appointment. I understand that she has a lot that's going on.
Is online lottery part of the budget, Tacky?
Came out of the House Ways and Means version. It was not touched going through the budget process. Head over to the Senate. The Senate did not do this last time when we put in an economic development bill. I do not expect the Senate to put it in as part of the budget. The Senate policy, the Senate President's office is that whatever we do, they don't. So, and whatever they do, we don't. So whatever's in the House, the Senate won't do. There's a reason they think.
Oh, that's democracy at its finest.
This was not the way when I started this gig. They only disagreed on major policy issues. All the routine stuff shouldn't be a problem. So, for example, I was able to put into budget charitable alcohol auctions. This was expired in 2018, sunset law. And it really, really just applies really big entities are getting donations and large viable qualities of alcohol for auctioning for charities. And, expired in 2018, and we never thought about it again because pandemic showed up in 2020 because we're doing like an revaluation, but whether it makes sense. And ABCC called over and they're like, hey, we're getting these requests this summertime for these big events in Martha's Vineyard. I'm like, oh. So normally I try to move this through the legislative process of passing a bill out, but given the urgency of the matter, August coming quickly, the budget seemed the most prudent way to get it done because it has to be done by July. And even if it's not passing law in both House and Senate or in agreement, I mean, the NBCC can move forward with the assurance the governor is going to sign into law. So, right now we're dealing with a time crunch situation, and the budget is a vehicle to address a time crunch policies, something like this. So, we're working, on these kind of things that are beyond the city of Quincy. But it has huge implications statewide. People sometimes forget I do other stuff beyond just local projects. I do. I have a bit of responsibility on the bigger scale through not just committee chair, but also through other organizations I work with statewide.
Sure. Yeah. Okay. So, I mean, it passed unanimously. So there you go.
Yeah. I mean, like I said, almost all the consolidated amendments, they take all our amendments and put them into a monster amendment. As we kind of like try to get stuff in and out of consolidated after we see the thing. And it was, like I said, it was a really quiet debate. Again, once we got the revenue stuff out of the way, both end of the political spectrum, really the far ends of the spectrum tends to pick it up in their battles. And that was not the battleground this year. Right? A lot of the projects that people were looking for didn't get everything you want. No one ever gets anything you want. Right. But it reached a satisfaction level that mission accomplished. They got what they needed to get things done. So various state agencies and private organizations the state supports, as well as our own local projects. And as like I say, you know, everyone got a piece of cake out of it. So, you know, I have no complaints. I mean, putting aside, you know, I have a large number of policy stuff this year. You know, I filed 15 amendments. I got 12.
Pretty good odds.
Yeah, remarkably good. I rarely get 12. I mean, generally I get a closer to 50% or a little bit lower rate on amendment success, regardless of how many amendments I file. So, you know, this is closer to 75% success rate. So yeah. I honestly can't complain. You know, I really can't.
Now that's news in itself, that Tacky's not complaining.
Well, no one ever listens, even though just hit the mute button if I start complaining. It's not like you can't turn me off.
So let's switch gears and talk about the Supreme Court throwing out like 30,000 drunk driving cases.
I know we always talk about activist courts all the time, but people tend to context that in the federal level. People don't realize the Supreme Judicial Court is extremely engaged in making their own laws, let's put it that way. I mean, I have an opinion that every judge is an activist judge, because every judge comes in with their own personal biases and points of view of the world that applies to how they issue case law. And I don't care who you are. You're human as everybody else. You're not a machine. Although the way AI is going, maybe we all get replaced.
That's true.
You know, but it gets AI's garbage in, garbage out. I always remember
too. Yeah.
So, you know, the Supreme Judicial Court, you know, they decided the evidence wasn't properly done. And here we go again. And very similar to the Annie Duke and drug case situation, you know, what is the proper due process? And one or two or three human beings deciding that they should be judge and jury.
Yeah, I mean, and the unspoken part of this is the victims of these incidents are going to have to, you know, relive them again.
That is a big problem. And, you know, the court, well, understanding the point of due process, and I value due process very much as well. You know, they're not great at providing remedies. So a court can provide a ruling on the underlying law, but they also can provide a remedy. And generally, the legislature's trying to interpret, is there a remedy in your case law or not? And whether or not, you know, we're able to thread the needle on it. And, you know, we'll see how it goes. I mean, district attorneys have the work out for them, and also the defense attorneys, you know, also have a lot of work out of them. And you write about the victims. And you also got insurance claims, you know, somewhat out there because of the nature of these cases. So, yeah, I mean, it's a lot to go through. And it's, you know, it's very regretful. And it'll be a little bit, again, it'd be easier if the courts actually said, hey, okay, well, we got a problem in due process, you know, here's a remedy.
Yeah, that didn't happen, unfortunately. I'd be curious to see if the governor, you know, looks to kind of reshuffle things like she did at the MBTA.
We'll see. I mean, there's a mandatory retirement age in Massachusetts judges. It's age 70. So every judge in Massachusetts hits age 70, you're done, you're out. So Charlie Baker had, you know, a very strong hand on appointing judges, like a lot of judges, including more than half of the Supreme Judicial Court.
Mm-hmm.
So, but they're also aging out. And if Maura Healey serves two full terms, which she may not, she may, I have no idea. I'm a term-by-term based kind of guy, too, and what I'm going to do in my life. You know, she could potentially fill the court again with perhaps not quite half, but maybe 3 out of 7. So, you know, timing's everything on some of this stuff. And, you know, obviously, you know, the legislation court doesn't always get along.
Well, it's designed that way in the Constitution. Yeah.
Yeah. We won't get into some of the cases regarding my lifetime. Was like, what are you doing? But we know we've worked out a workaround as well. And, but I mean, there's no interest by the legislature to change the court system. We're one of 5 states, I believe, that has an appointed system, not elected judges. Most states have elected judges. And some judges aren't actually court judges. They're basically administrative judges. Some of our court judges, and some actually do elect their elect their Supreme Courts. Like there was a huge case in Wisconsin.
Yeah.
It was a massive battle between, it was a partisan race. It's not a nonpartisan race. It's D's and R's. Of fighting over an election of a judge. And most people in Massachusetts doesn't live with this kind of campaigning, so you're not used to it. But if you go pretty much, 45 some odd states, and some aren't elected statewide, they're elected at the county level. So, county politics is very different in other states. And, and there's also specific rules of ethics around judge fundraisers. They have to do special committees that is segregated from the judge. It's quite involved.
Right. Yeah. We have the governor's council here in Massachusetts. So that's where voters can have their say.
Yeah. People know what they were voting for governor's council, because most of the people listening have no idea what we're talking about. Small percentage that actually know what I'm saying are very astute in Massachusetts civics. The rest of you are like, what is a governor's council, right? And
it's actually a very important role. Yeah,
it is. They appoint, they approve judge recommendations by the governor. They approve notaries and justice of peace, and they have powers regarding commuting sentences. So people forget to find out you have to go to the governor's council commuting a sentence. But constitutionally, lieutenant governor is the chair of the governor's council. There's 8 members elected, and lieutenant governor is the chair. A lieutenant governor is unavailable. The governor can chair. The governor can't chair. The acting governor can chair, which would be Secretary Galvin, if both the governor and lieutenant governor are not available. But that's the pecking order. Lieutenant governor, didn't move down the constitutional officer line of the inavailability because they're out of state or incapacitated.
Right. Yeah. Unfortunately, usually it's the place on the ballot that people just vote for the candidate for re-election or leave it blank.
Yeah. And even when they're challenged, trying to understand their role and their so-called voting record or their achievements is kind of a tricky wicket, because you got to really have to understand, every single appointment day, who they appointed, what that appointment's about. We're talking about hundreds and hundreds of appointments here.
Yeah. So yeah. You have to really research it and be dedicated to looking into it, because it's not provided for you. You need to go looking for it.
And it's a super important job. It's not like me. Believe it or not, looking at my record ain't that hard.
Right.
It really isn't. Which means the news media, the availability of the internet, just Googling stuff, as well as, going to the state's website, or even just calling the city, the town, the Senate and House clerk's offices. Mm-hmm. Plus, you can go, if you want paper, you can go to the State House Library and pull the journals out. And, there's always Westlaw. For those old attorneys, if you buy the one that includes legislative histories, you can kind of, decipher what's happening if you know how to read it, particularly the attorneys. Obviously Westlaw's an attorney usage or paralegal usage as well. So, they know how to decipher what's going on when they read the Westlaw. So, it's not a shortage of resources. Governor's Council is much more complex because actually not just to vote at the council, but who they voted for. See, I'm a public policy, right? Money, public policy, you like the policy, not like the policy, you get it. They vote on humans to be judges. So if you're a voter who's concerned about your governor's council, you actually have to look at the judges they appointed.
Right, exactly, yeah. But that's the process here in Massachusetts, at least. So that's the system we have right now.
Yeah, and also shields the... shields the legislature from actually being engaged in the process, right? I mean, obviously there's campaign money involved, but you can't donate. I know if you're a nominee, you have to have a 1-year grace period, I believe, if you're a nominee, giving to the governor's council. But then once you're a judge, you and your family members cannot raise money for anyone. So there are a lot of prohibitions on judicial members once they, appointed, and including going to the nomination process. The governor's council is separate from the legislature. We don't appoint them. We don't affect them. They're constitutionally created, so we can't actually get rid of them through without a constitutional amendment, which is, we talked in the past, is not an easy thing to do. Right. So it is really a body that's actually, the word isn't shielded, but definitely not as influenced by the legislature.
Yeah, and rightfully so. We're seeing the U.S. Supreme Court having issues with that right now, at least one member.
Well, I wish you could take judges to private, take flights to private islands and get lovely gifts of Frederick Douglass original first editions. I just saying, I do understand that every state's ethics laws are different. I'm aware that D.C. is different from every creature. And I know that Massachusetts is one of the strictest ethics laws in the country, including campaign finance. I don't care what the sunshine people say. If you actually do look around and see how things work in other states, when I talk to other people in other states, how things work, I'm always aghast because I'm like, we couldn't get away with it here. But the U.S. Supreme Court in particular is really kind of like, really? And, you know, it doesn't matter your political persuasion or your personal opinions. They all put their hand in the pot, and they've been doing it forever. And it doesn't matter if you think one judge is your righteous cause judge. They're no different from anyone else. Mm-hmm. So this is a, you know, Chief Justice Roberts, you know, oversees the administration of the court. They're going to have to come up with some solutions regarding, you know, what they're going to do here, because the questionable integrity of the system is problematic. Polling has shown that the public in general has the lowest faith in the U.S. Supreme Court ever since they started polling. And faith in our judicial system is one of the pillars of foundation in American society. And apparently certain justices, well, they all participate in this behavior. Some of these are worse than others. Mm-hmm. On the surface. And apparently being a pillar of America's society is not relevant to them, which is actually a very sad state about responsibility, understanding the bigger picture of where you are in it all, and particularly a group that's that elite. There's barely, barely under 200, maybe, not even 200 U.S. Supreme Justices in the history of the country.
Right. So, yeah, and I'm curious, I would not expect it from somebody of their generation, you know, not to malign younger generations, but it just the way that they were brought up during the time in this country when they were brought up, I think morals and ethics were different.
It's amazing how power corrupts can corrupt, absolutely, right? I mean, particularly when you have zero oversight. You know, John Adams correctly pointed out the court needed to be independent structure of the three branches of government so they can be impartial in decision making and not be influenced by politics. Of course, John Adams created a political mechanism to get him appointed through the U.S. Senate. So it creates some degree of accountability to the states, because again, it's U.S. senators weren't elected at the time. They were state appointed positions to the U.S. Senate to ensure that state rights are considered as part of appointment of judges at the time. And also to pick quality people over 6-year terms that aren't subject to the whims of the mob. You know, regarding a mob rule is the most dangerous thing or something like that.
Yes, yes.
And if it's an extreme statement, but if you think about it carefully, you understand what he's getting at. I mean, the public sways move the wind and impacts us to a 2-year terms. You know, regarding re-election, the shifting patterns of people's opinions move easily. And John Adams was very astute about the fact that people can, as a group, especially in a group, can change their minds in a heartbeat. Mm-hmm. And, you know, God give the guy credit. He gets that. And we live it. We live with it. The most people don't understand. But the, you know, that was the thought process of how you're going to appoint them. But, you know, I didn't think they would ever envision, you know, the kind of things that are going on now. And of course, don't forget, we've changed the court size more than once. It's not always been 9. It was once 7, but the first one, I believe, was 6.
I think that's right, yeah, which just boggles the mind, because how do you break a tie?
Yeah, John Marshall, the first Supreme Court justice, had to deal with the ability to have a deadlock court. And mm-hmm. Congress has the ability to grow and shrink the size of the court. The Constitution mm-hmm. is silent regarding the number of members. So, you know, court has changed over the years. But yeah, you're right, 6. Like Congress made it 6. It was like, what were you all thinking down there? People were assuming 5 to 7, but no, it was 6.
Right. Yeah, I know. Can we, can I ask you about a local issue, Tacky?
If I know what it is.
Regarding the Lunar New Year, and do you think it should be a school holiday here in Quincy?
Yeah, I saw that in the The Sun. I get the digital version of the Ledger, and I still get the paper version of the Sun. And I saw it in the front page the first time. There were like 5 or 6 people testifying in favor of that proposal. So a little bit of education, folks. So the Lunar holiday, not for everyone, for most folks, this is considered a secular holiday. A lot of the recognitions of holidays in the city are generally revolved around Gregorian calendars or religious. And, you know, I use
Rosh Hashanah.
Rosh Hashanah, you know, is the Jewish New Year. Yep. We probably should do something for Ramadan, for example. It's a holy week weekend for, is it 2 days? Is it like a sundown to sun up kind of thing too?
I think that's right. Yeah.
So it's like 2 days in a weird kind of sundown, sun up situation, you know, for the Muslim community, right? In the Buddhist community, depending which end of lunar calendar you use, you know, the life, death, and ascendance of the Buddha, you know, happened on the same day on the calendar and is recognized by the United Nations. That's a religious holiday.
Mm-hmm.
So while the First Amendment, you know, keeps church and state separate, it isn't that we haven't, we also can, you know, respect another people's religions. You can do it through the school system, you know, whether or not, you know, giving, you know, kids a day off or, you know, create a holiday for that day. New Year is actually kind of interesting conversation because it's not, not for everyone, but for many folks, it is not a religious holiday.
No, it's like New Year's Day here, right?
Yeah, the Gregorian calendar on New Year's Day is not a religious thing. It's, you had to have a start and end of a calendar.
Right.
Let's be honest about this. It's not, it's a little bit of an arbitrary situation for the Gregorian calendar about when things begin and when things end. And the lunar calendar, well, it was based on a wonderful story, which you probably have heard a few times already. Through QATV and other sources, you know, it does involve a jade emperor, you know, a type of a godlike figure, but, you know, it's not a worshipped holiday. And this is kind of the interesting debate. We'll see if the school committee can get their heads around
it. Yeah, I know the vice chair supports the holiday, although he pointed out that you'd have to make the day up somewhere else in the year.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And to my knowledge, there are very few places that allow students not to come in on lunar holiday. I believe it's Boston Latin being one of them, the only Boston Latin in the Boston school system. And it is a major holiday for people that follow the lunar calendar. It actually goes on for 2 weeks. There is a Lantern Festival at the end. And in China and other places that follow the lunar calendar, they actually do a 2 week holiday.
Yeah, it's a big party.
It's a big party. Yeah. On the flip side, don't have a whole lot of other holidays.
True.
So this is a traditional thing. I'm not obviously advocating for a 2 week holiday. I'm just pointing out there's a bit of a difference here, right? Between religious holidays versus a secular cultural holiday.
Yes, although, I mean, New Year's Day is not religious, you know, either. It's a secular holiday, right?
Yeah, but Christmas was before that. So.
Yeah.
You know, as people know, I work on holidays, I work on my birthday. I don't care. But I do know it's important for many folks that aren't workaholics. You know, take those days off to be with your family. At the same
time. That was the big, I mean, in China, at least, because it's so geographically huge, they needed that amount of time, right, to go visit their families.
Oh, it'd take you 2 weeks. I mean, the traffic jams in China can go on for like 5 days, depending right. Where you are in the country, trying to get from point A to point B. And the train system, people travel a train lot down there. It's because of just sheer number of people you got to move around. You can't put them all on a plane. Big country, very big country people. So, you know, you need the full 2 weeks to travel around the country.
Yeah.
People here, you know, may travel to a place like Canada. A lot of Chinese folks in Canada, you know, may travel to other parts of the country. And some will travel overseas, but not often. Back to wherever their country or actually town or city of origin were actually where their other family live. But it's also very pricey, you know, to travel. And you guys shouldn't be surprised, but, you know, during the lunar holiday season, airfare goes up like 400%.
Of course, yeah. it's like spring break week, right?
Yeah, like very specific destinations in Asian countries will have a massive spike in airfare. A big surprise, right? So, you know, it's a good time kind of dodging the question a little bit because, you know, I didn't grow up in an environment where, you know, people took in consideration my feelings regarding lunar holidays and whatnot. But, you know, I was also brought up in a different kind of mentality. Yeah, we can always celebrate, but it doesn't have to be that day. And, you know, both my parents worked as well. And Christmas wasn't quite Christmas Day. And Lunar Day wasn't quite Lunar Day either. We end up going on weekends. Because it was a work day for my parents and it was school day for me. And then, you know, dad would drag us out in the car on a Saturday Before, generally after the Lunar New Year day is over, and we go visit relatives, and which there aren't that many of, actually. You have to go to Canada to visit relatives, but at the time, but we visit a lot of old friends, and I would collect my red envelopes and eat some candy and fruit, and we pay our respects to our elders by driving mm-hmm. around visiting them. Mm-hmm. That was when I was a child. My dad would drag you out of bed. You got to do this. It's like 6 a.m. on a Saturday. I want my Saturday morning cartoons, but no, this is where getting, doing our respects to our elders, driving around to our friends' houses. So, but then again, we didn't do a Lunar Day. It was a work day for mom and dad.
Yeah. Maybe you can't answer this. Would it require state approval from the State Department of Education?
If it's a makeup day, no.
Okay.
I mean, if you're as long as they meet the requirement of minimum number of days. No, it was like, individual person for this and that regarding, special exemptions. I don't have an answer for you. I've asked Susan, for example, if you want to take Ramadan off as a religious holiday period, what do you do? Right. I don't have an answer.
Okay.
Also, it's an interesting question as well, because, for example, you have holiday observed. So it falls on a weekend and not a business day. Holiday observed, right?
Good point. Yep.
The calendar doesn't always work to your favor, especially a lunar calendar was always a moving target, right? Because it's a synchro to Gregorian calendar. Yeah. And the Gregorian calendar's one religious holiday really is Christmas.
Christmas, right. Yeah.
And I do know that, people can get Holy Friday off. And when I was a Saint, I got Holy Thursday and Holy Monday off and All Saints Day. I do know these holidays because I got them off at St. Anne's. I didn't get them off at BC High. So.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
Yeah, very different educational approach at BC High. You're going to school, kids, period. We're here to whip an education into you. So don't expect to enjoy this extra holidays you got when you're in elementary school because of religious holidays.
Okay. Right, but it's a very local decision then.
When I was at Brandeis, obviously different education institution, I had the Jewish holidays, right? Particularly things we talked about, Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. Those were the two big ones. And I remember my Jewish friends were like, we should get Hanukkah off. And the school's like, no.
Hanukkah. Because they'd want all 8 days off.
Yeah, you're not getting Hanukkah. I mean, it was the school system, the universe was very clear. No, you're not getting Hanukkah. Because Hanukkah fell right in the middle of midterm and final exams, depending on which classes you're in.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
So I was like, we can escape exams. Like, no. So
okay, interesting. It'll be interesting to see where it goes. That correctly noted, the school committee vice chair indicated that at least 30% of the city's population is of some Asian descent. So,
but not all of them. Population. But not all of them follow the exact same practices.
Right. Right.
You can't lump us into a group and say that. My parents would bristle at the idea of not going to school.
Oh, really?
I know this for an answer. My dad was still around. Who just filed out saying no?
Okay.
You go to school. And people forget I went to St. Anne's. St. Anne's didn't follow the Quincy Public School school notices for snow days.
Mm-hmm.
You have to listen for the Catholics who specifically WBC radio at 6:45 in the morning to see if there's a cancellation. You have to stay on that radio to 7:30 to ensure that if school has been canceled. I've been to school when Quincy Public Schools were canceled.
Mm-hmm.
So, and the same thing with BC High. Just because Boston Public Schools closed doesn't mean that BC High closed.
Yeah, most private schools are, I know Severian Brothers is the same as well. It's separate from the Braintree school system. So, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So, I kind of grew up in a different kind of school system. And it's not a bad or good. I'm just pointing out the fact that, the old story of traveling through snowstorms, uphill, sideways, no shoes on kind of stories, right? But, it was different.
That's another interesting point, though. So if it is made a holiday in Quincy schools and then a student decides or the parents tell them, you can't have that day off, do they get an extra day somewhere else?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, particularly immigrant families have a high value education moving forward. And the expectation is kids going to succeed. The personal concerns do not outweigh the interests of the child's education. Just saying.
Okay.
I'll tell you, my dad would be like, no.
Stay tuned.
I'm a different generation, folks.
Yeah.
I'm a different generation. So
okay.
We'll see how they respond and whether or not the school committee actually has full grasp and knowledge about the diversity and different cultures associated with it and the differences between the religious and secular holidays.
It'll be a learning experience, quite appropriate in the school system, right?
Well, this was, again, the challenges of a greater diversity in our government, right? If you have more diversity in government, particularly people who live in different cultures, able to provide better insight and understand that not even in China, there's such a big country, you said earlier, they have different cultural differences among themselves and understand mm-hmm. the great diversity there. Hopefully that helps you make more sound decisions, on a policy level. I do it at a statewide policy level. People don't realize this. I mean, you do things, regarding boards and commissions, I mean, linguistic access, sensitivity of things like human trafficking and domestic violence, it's part of our conversations a lot and how it differs from other folks and how intimidation works and how coercion works. We do this on a statewide policy level. You know, have to understand the cultures we have to deal with and try to see if we can find public policies to meet those cultural differences to ensure that people are safe and people are protected under the civil rights. So, yeah, we do this at our level. And I don't claim to have knowledge of every single culture, but I mean, colleagues, are from different parts of the state and we have a mm-hmm. diverse conversation about this. And if they don't know, they'll find somebody that knows. Mm-hmm. And as Papyrus, I'll give you a simple example. I mean, one of the things I brought up to Asian Caucus for discussion but endorsement was creating a Muslim commission. Mm-hmm. And right off the bat, I'm like, we have a church and state problem because this is not an issue regarding an ethnic group. This is a religious thing. And the reason I say that, because, different religions, have different entry points. Let's put it that way. Race is not an entry point for most religions that I'm aware of, unless there is a entry point, race being an entry point for religion or ethnicity being an entry point for religion. You have to, go with the religion. So last time I checked, every religion has a different requirements for entry, for serious entry, not just say you are, you're going to do this.
Right.
Ethnicity may or may not be relevant in circumstances. So for example, certain Native Americans, have an ancestry based on maternal determination. Mm-hmm. If I correctly remember, Jewish is also maternal.
Yes.
But if you can become Jewish without a yes. maternal bloodline, but you have to go through a whole educational process.
Correct.
I don't remember just saying that you have to be a certain ethnic group to get in.
Right. No, you just have to fulfill the requirements dictated by that religion. Yeah.
Yeah. So this is where you run into a problem with the Muslim commission because it becomes a church and state question.
Yeah.
So give an example of some of the conversations I have in my world. There's one of them as we're trying to get our heads around different things. And, I understand why they want to have a state commission to help guide Muslims as well as help provide advice on state government policy. However, we have the church and state problem, and how do you change the legislation to better reflect the Constitution regarding separation of church and state? And that conversation has already started, but it's something I flagged in. It was over my colleague Trump Nguyen, who's also attorney, flagged in caucus, and the sponsor of the bill just kind of was like, okay, I guess see where you're coming from. But it didn't dawn on what was going to be a problem for reasons I don't quite grasp. And we do things for our constituents, but also remind folks, you have to think about this before you do things for your constituents. You just don't do it because they ask. You have to give it some thought as you do things for your constituency. And there's different politicians, and some just say yes to everything. And I like to give it a little bit of thought before I say yes. That's all.
We will have to leave it there because we're out of time, Zaki.
Well, good to see you, Joe. Happy anniversary again. And hope you didn't mind my extended lessons on more random stuff we'd like to talk about. You brought up the topic this time. I'm not taking the blame for this one.
I fully accept that.
Last week, I meandered off the pathway to random things. So you can blame me for the ones
no,
I mean.
Not you.
The meandering. You can tell I'm still a bit tired from the budget.
Right. Let's give out your contact information.
Sure, 617-722-2370, 617-722-2370 is the number. We're in room 42 in the State House. Still, we are open. I am staffed. Staff is running around like old times. So sometimes not everyone's going to be at the phone as they're running from meeting to meeting. So we're returning to normal. And tacky.chan at mahouse.gov, tacky.chan at mahouse.gov. It's nice when the budget's over because I don't get as many emails about the budget right now. And of course, State Representative Facebook account, State Representative Tacky Chan Facebook, and at Tacky Chan at Twitter. Again, please don't social media messages. Just call the office. It makes my life a whole lot easier to understand what's going on. And tackychan.org, as well as the state website, malegislature.gov. A reminder to folks that there is no longer Facebook streaming regarding public hearings that I chair. If you're interested in seeing what I do, the state website is required to broadcast those and keep recordings now. And if you want to participate at the State House on a virtual public hearing, like you want to testify, it's on Microsoft Teams. So be sure you have the right software downloaded on your device so you can participate in public hearings as a testifier, not with just my committee, but any committee. So just remind folks that it's Teams now. So, and of course, QATV and listen to Joe in the Morning on the podcast, Quincy in Brief.